You're listening to We Are STS, a podcast from the Department of Science and Technology Studies at University College London. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to We Are STS. I'm your host, Professor Joe Kane. This is episode 2 of the podcast, and it's our first dedicated to the subject of careers after university. In this episode, I talk with Dr. Jean-Baptiste Guyon. He's an associate professor of science communication in the department. Jean-Baptiste also is our careers tutor. That means he specializes in working with our students to help them think about the future and to think about career paths they might take. In our interview, we talk about a new initiative started by our students. It's a new careers task force. Since I had him on the line, we talk more widely about career thinking, about why studentships are a good idea, and about the value not-so-obvious choices can have when building a great career. The big message we have is that when you're building experience early in a career, it's often not what you do, but what you do with it that counts. We explain what we mean in the conversation. Also, listen out for Jean-Baptiste's metaphor about sailing. I think it helps keep some of these choices in perspective. We're talking over an internet connection, and we start our conversation talking about that new student-led task force. So, Jean-Baptiste, there's this talk of starting a careers task force amongst the students. What's that about?
Instead of imposing on students what we think they need in terms of careers and careers information and guidance, is to take the reverse approach and adopt a kind of a bottom-up approach to careers advice, which is going from what do students need and enabling students to devise and design all the activities and events they think they will need to be successful in finding their career path. So the idea is that the Lunar Society, which is the student society based at STS in the department, has set up a subgroup which is specifically dedicated to organizing speakers' events, information sessions, having people come and give some advice to students based on what they hear from the student body in the department about what people think they need in terms of planning their next step in their career.
That's fantastic. I mean, what's nice about that, of course, is that students are far more aware of what they need right now than we are. And of course, we have a kind of a formal clock that we follow, but it's great to see the students. So what are they telling you that they want to start organizing?
So for example, they want to organize events which enable students to learn how to use LinkedIn in a much more efficient way. They are keen on bringing in people who can give an example of how they've achieved a successful professional life and all that kind of thing. And really, I think it's basically applying to careers advice something we say about science communication, which is my own field of research, which is basically adopting, acknowledging that people are not just empty teapots to be filled in, but they have something to say and contribute in debates about science, but also careers and that kind of stuff. So, yeah.
That's fantastic. What are you seeing? We are recording this in January. I'm starting to see a lot of careers interest amongst the students that I'm involved with. What are you seeing from the students? Are you getting, for example, requests for letters of recommendation and conversations about studentships and things like that?
Yeah, so most of what I got is requests for reference letters to go further in their studies, really. I've had one or two people come and see me asking what I thought was a sensible choice in terms of careers after graduating from STS. The problem with this question is that STS offers such a broad range of skills that you can do pretty much anything you want. So it's more an issue with choosing what you want to do than knowing what you can do.
That is one of those frustrating things, isn't it? Because you can do so many things. What will you do? It's very hard to narrow down. And I mean, I'm certainly seeing that as term one comes to an end in mid-December, students are far too busy with assignments. And then over the break, they have time to regroup and think about what they want to do next year. Or in the family conversations, they have to answer the question, you know, from parents, what are you going to do? And so I certainly see a lot of email traffic pick up, which is perfectly fine. It's exactly what we should be using personal tutors for. And when I see students asking those general queries about what do you think, it's immediately let's get into a conversation and talk our way forward.
I think this year is a bit different because everybody's stuck at home and there is no moment where students can just approach you in a very informal way asking that kind of question. But the beginning of the year is also when students start thinking about studentships, summer internships, and you know something about that, Joe, because I think you were the one to set up that scheme of summer internships in the department when you were head. So,
yeah, that's
what
right.
Do you think is the value of those summer internships for students?
Yeah, they're so important now. I mean, the ones that we do in STS are relatively small. I mean, they're 8 weeks, one day a week, and the idea is to get a little bit of money to people to help them pay, but far more importantly, it's about experience of doing things. And we've now run that program for 5 or 6 or 7 years now. I've kind of lost track. But the record of success is all over the place. I think we've had publications, we've had a lot of data collected and analyzed, and then we've had a few that have been more kind of exploratory, not really outcome oriented. But I think the studentship process is good. And also, I think what's great about it is it reminds staff that students are desperate to have studentships, to be involved in career training. And I mean, I see people now volunteering for 2 week internships, you know, 2 days a week and basically a couple of hours, so that the sum total of their commitment is, you know, 8 hours or something over 2 weeks. And my advice to them is take it, you know, get in there, do it. And because even if it's lousy, you walk away and say, yeah, I spent 2 weeks in that and I just thought it was terrible. You know, I don't want to be one of those anymore. Or if nothing else, if you're even just delivering the tea and coffee, you know, which sounds like such a menial thing to do, at the same time, you're listening to things, you're picking up information, you're watching. And again, you're deciding, you know, do I want to do that? It's perfectly fine to say no at the end of it. That's the fundamental value of a studentship is giving it a go.
Yeah, and I think what is also important with those studentships is that, I mean, there is the kind of myth of a kind of straightforward trajectory for a career path. And in fact, what we find when you look back at your own trajectory is that it hasn't been a straightforward thing, and you've tried many things, and you dipped your toes in many different waters, and you chose eventually what was for you and what wasn't. And those studentships are a good way of making those kind of experiments.
Yeah, yeah.
Without any risks.
Yeah, it's very low risk, isn't it? You know, and yeah, if you didn't like it, it was just a couple of weeks of giving it a go. Now, talking about dipping your toes into waters to explore careers, you and I have both done that. And before we started the recording, we started to talk about that a little bit. Let's get into that a bit. So what waters did you dip your toe in before you became a brilliant STS academic?
Wow. What have I been? I think my first job ever was to work in a service station. Mm-hmm. in a rural area of France, delivering fuel to people. Mm-hmm. That was my first ever paid job. Then I've been a visitor's attendant in museums in France for a number of years. I've worked in a few museums in Paris, just keeping an eye on people, making sure that they didn't touch things. And then I've worked in Popular Science magazine for a while. I've learned how to be a journalist that way. And it served me later on. I worked for the Prime Minister in France. I did a small website for them. So, and then I ended up being an academic in UCL.
Boy, you really slipped that in. So I work for the Prime Minister. Yeah, it's no big deal. I just did that. Were you responsible for any major policy initiatives? You didn't sneak anything onto the website, did you?
I was working for the archive services at the Prime Minister office. And my job was to put together a website to publicize the archives of a former prime minister. Mm-hmm. So I had to do it from scratch. I was just given the boxes with the papers, all those I was allowed to see, because there were many things I wasn't allowed to see, and to build the architecture of the web interface. I don't think they ever used it.
Fantastic, but someone's using it in the world, you know, somewhere.
Yeah, maybe a researcher in history.
I just heard a fantastic discussion about archiving public officials when they leave their office, because this is January 2020. There's going to be a transition. I mean, 2021. There's going to be a transition in the American presidency, and essentially they were asking the question: what can a president throw away, and what is kept? And the story of the archivists basically was that, we've seen this coming. We keep everything, and you know, we have ways to keep everything. And if you think you're shredding that document and it's going to disappear, sorry. And it's not true for everything, but it's anything electronic basically now in the U.S. is just automatically dealt with.
Archived, and what we find is that no document exists in a single copy, or very rarely so. So even if I don't know how it is in the US, but in France, it's illegal to destroy that kind of material, even though they are shredding like mad at the end of.
Anyway, that's a great place where history and politics can intersect really crucial ways. But the story of your career development, it's not just that you've been all over the place and you had no direction, but you you always strike me as a person who's open to new possibilities.
Yeah, I think it's really the idea. It's just take advantage of any opening which comes your way, basically. Just give it a go. Sometimes it may last for 3 months. Sometimes it may last for two years. And you never know. And you never know where it will take you. And you can benefit from anything. I mean, being a museum attendant looks quite dull, but in fact, it's not. You learn a lot of stuff about art and people visiting museums, and you would be surprised at the number of people with a PhD.
I certainly have heard plenty of stories of people who are security attendants in art museums who become incredible experts at the art that they're surrounded by all day long. And I suppose the issue there is, you know, to take that kind of job as opposed to stay at home and play on your video games. The question is, what are you getting out of it? And well, if you're a security guard and all you do is think about, you know, your next holiday, and you don't spend any time improving yourself, then maybe it is just money. You know, it's a job that gives you just money. But if you're trying to develop it, even playing computer games, if at the end of it you've got ideas about, for example, how to communicate complex information in a dynamic format.
Yeah, I think the idea is to be productive. Yeah. To be in that frame of mind. But enough about me. What about you, Joe? You also have a kind of interesting, and I've always be willing to know more about it. So what's your trajectory?
Well, I mean, like you, I did spend time at when I was an undergraduate working as a security guard in a library, kicking people who were ever so slightly younger than me out for flirting and being noisy and all those sorts of things. But my own background, like many people in history and philosophy of sciences, is I have a science background. I trained as a zoologist, and I've worked in research labs, particularly for cancer research. And I spent, as an undergraduate master's student, I spent a lot of time as a kind of intern level researcher, did all kinds of stuff on ways to block cancer growth. I did that for a while. And then I guess I didn't realize it at the time, but I kind of got tired of killing mice. It started to wear me down. And particularly on weeks when we weren't doing any research for whatever reason. And the cycle has to continue every week. So you have a colony of mice raised to be available to you at a certain age during a particular week. And if you don't use them, well, that's it for them. That was their one moment. And off they go to the next thing. It was either a lot of waste or it was a lot of pressure on me to get it done. So one of the two, I'm not quite sure which.
Yeah, there is a lot of emotions involved in that kind of practice.
Indeed, right. So I went through that, and then I got interested in history and philosophy of science, and I went through graduate school. I got teaching jobs where I was teaching retired people or pensioners stuff in history of science. And what was brilliant about that was here I was, this incredibly overconfident mid-20s, you know, aspiring kid. And I was telling people about World War II and what really happened. And every day someone would raise their hand and say, I'll tell you what happened in World War II. I landed on the beach, you know, and it's like, ah, yeah, great. But there's a bigger context, I kept saying, you know, no way. So that was beautifully humbling, I think is the way to say it. And then I got involved in publishing. I worked in science publishing for a while and mostly produced books and spent a lot of time rewriting people's books and thinking about how to tie science publishing to education. And then fell into the academic track and did philosophy and history and got my PhD finished off and never really looked back. But what's fantastic about those kind of experiences, I think you can often tell people who've gone through a straight academic track. So they've gone from undergraduate to master's to PhD and straight on. And then people who have worked in other kinds of environments. And it's not that one is better than the other, but the kinds of questions that people ask, they tend to be rather different, and the kinds of tasks that people like to take on, I find they tend to be rather different. And I guess it helps thinking about giving advice to students in career wise, so their undergraduate days are coming to an end, and maybe they want to jump straight into a master's because they can see very clearly a path. Great, go for it. But then there's plenty of other people who say, well, I don't know what I want to do. I'll just do a master's. And you think, well, you know, it is a lot of money, but also it's a lot of effort and it's a lot of pressure, particularly if you're not sure that's what you want to do. And my advice on to students who say, I'm not sure what I'm going to do. I think I will just by default keep doing the thing that I'm good at. And my advice is always take a year off, go do something else, because first of all, we'll be here. You know, we'll be here in a couple of years. We'll be here. So you can always come back and we will welcome you with open arms. And at the same time, adding experience will only make you better. And no matter what that experience is, digging ditches is important work. And there's plenty to do, plenty to reflect on. Being a museum attendant is noble work, and it's hard to do. And at the same time, people with that kind of experience, any kind of experience, always, to me, they always come back with bigger questions, and they tend to be more confident. I particularly like the gap years where people travel the world and see the world and don't particularly do anything academic. Maybe they read a bit, maybe, but it's more about seeing and embracing and capturing. I always find that when they come back into the academic universe, they're ready to talk about things that we want to talk about.
Yeah, because academia is a very specific, small world. one of the things which I think is important is to organize moments in your existence where your mind can be vacant, because that's when ideas come up to you. That's when you start imagining things and thinking out of the box. And in academia, you are constantly kept on your toes intellectually. So you always have to come up with ideas, to think about things, but in a way which is a bit guided or directed. Whereas if you take a gap year, as you say, and go wherever you want, it's a perfect moment to have those moments where you think of nothing and you just let things come at you, and then you start interpreting them in your way.
I like that idea of thinking about nothing. It's really important, isn't it? You know, and I think it, you know, because we're talking during lockdown, and one of the beauties in being in lockdown is that we're surrounded by all the kit that we use in our daily lives. But that also is a negative, because you think, well, what moment of my day do I not have a device near me that I'm either trying to get information out of it or it's given me information? And I think the advice I'm giving to students now more and more and more is take a half an hour and put the gear down. You know, don't look at it when you eat. Don't look at it when you go to the loo. Don't look at it when you're making a cup of tea. That phrase, "I'll just check," what it does is it interferes with doing nothing. From my point of view, I think that's, you're hitting a really important point that, you know, we've got to spend some time reflecting. Anyway, so when it comes to thinking about gap years and stuff like that, since we're talking about careers, thinking about gap years, I think it comes back to an incredibly important point that you made before, which is it's not what you do, it's what you do with it.
Yes.
And if you spend a year lying on the beach in some beautiful climate, if that's what you have on your CV, well, what did you do last year? I laid on the beach. That's not enough. But if you laid on the beach and you develop skills in whatever, I worked at a bar on the beach, so I've learned entrepreneurial skills, I've learned client relationship skills, I've learned this, that I've learned that, you know, that idea of translating the activity into a sort of valuable CV work, then it's not wasted, right?
Yeah, that's true. The CV as a work in progress is very important. Maybe what you exemplify and myself to an extent as well is that you should never feel trapped in any kind of direction. You always are free to change tack, and it's important to keep as many doors open as you can for as long as you can. Mm-hmm. There comes a point in your life where you have to settle down, or maybe you need to settle down. It doesn't mean anything to it's not very productive to change tack again. Up to a certain stage in life, you shouldn't be afraid of trying many things and change tack.
Changing tack is so important. The conversation that a lot of students have had over the holidays with their families, it begins with the sentence, "What are you going to do and what are you going to be?" And I suppose the expectation is a specific answer. And that's where, what we find again and again and again is people who take degrees in, say, medicine or laws, they say, "Well, I'm going to be a solicitor. I'm going to be a doctor." And like, that's the answer. Even though there's a million different kinds of doctors and a million different kinds of solicitors, it just feels like it's a certain thing. Whereas STS students have always had the challenge of answering the question in under 10 minutes, right? It's, well, I could do this and I could do that. I might do this. And they say it's flexible, and quite sensibly, that drives family relatives crazy because it feels like it's not an answer, right?
Yeah.
So how do we help? I mean, how do we help students give an answer?
So I think when I hear you say that, I remember what in the past I was a admissions tutor for the department, and I got to talk with parents who came to visit the department. And one dad once told me, "That's fantastic. Your degree is education with a capital E. It's not teaching students a job. It's education in the old sense, where you teach the mind and you educate the mind and people learn skills and they improve, et cetera, et cetera." And I think that's one of the great things about the degree in STS is that you really acquire a lot of knowledge and skills which will enable you to do a lot of different things, and it prepares you to be an actor in the world much more than enabling you to take an identity of the peg, basically, and just putting on the coat of a doctor or a lawyer. Or not that those activities are... there is nothing wrong with that, but it's I think it makes you freer to take that kind of degree than to study those professions at university.
Yeah, the specificity there is comforting to some people, but I like the idea that education with a capital E, you know, that's great. I mean, I always talk about flexibility, but the you know that again, that it's really hard to convey why flexibility is important to people who are putting down a lot of money so that somebody can study in a university. And we're painfully aware that that's the case. But we just don't see that one-to-one relationship between a degree and a job, right? And
no.
I've said this many times. You've heard me say this many times, which is looking at the data about where students actually go. I have always been surprised by the number of students who go into consultancies of some kind or another. And it took me a long time to get my head around that. Then I spent some time learning what a consultant is and talking with students who've gone into that. Came back with that notion of flexible futures. And I always, you know, in STS, students don't know sort of on Monday morning what we're going to ask them to do by Friday afternoon. Here's a topic, go research it, come back and talk about it. And students have, it takes a little bit of time to get used to that. But once they're used to it, they do extremely well, very quickly. And to me, that's what a consultant is. You don't know what the boss is going to ask you to do, not ask, the boss is going to tell you to do on Monday morning. You know, get into my office, we've got a new client, here's what the client wants. And, you know, we want to know about spaceships. I don't know anything about spaceships. I don't care. You know, tell me about spaceships by Friday afternoon. Go. And, you know, the next week it's about horses. And the week after that, it's about, you know, who knows what, nanoparticles.
So, yeah, we are producing special advisors, basically.
Special people advisors. Yeah, that's what you...
Yeah. On an issue and make sense of it in a very short time and come up with a solution or perhaps more questions, but questions which start giving a direction to action or thinking, I think.
Yeah, that's a great idea, and you can definitely tell an STS student from other students who come through university who basically say, right, give me the recipe. I know how to make things from recipes. Whereas from STS students, it's no, you have to make the recipe. You know, sorry, you have to make the recipe. don't just make one. Don't just do it. Just make the recipe.
Give me the ingredients. I will tell you what you can do with them.
but the fact of the matter is that a lot of students go into consultancy style jobs in their first foray out into the world of employment, and some last a long time, some stay in it for a year or two and then go on to something else. But that ability to problem solve and fact find and story build, I think is absolutely crucial to what we're up to. So Jean-Baptiste, you're a big advocate of what you call career thinking. Can you tell us what that is and why it's important?
Yeah, so career thinking is not necessarily thinking about what your job will be, but it's being aware that you have many skills and that you can apply them in many different contexts. And so it's always trying to think of what your next move can be, always being open to the opportunities which present themselves to you and being able to adapt to those opportunities. And more importantly, I think, is to try and always try to be productive with what you are given to do at a given moment so that you can show up something for what you've done in the past.
That's brilliant. Yeah, absolutely brilliant. The way I sort of digest that is thinking about, you know, mom, dad, I've got a plan A, and that's to do this, but I also have plan B, C, D. And plan D is sort of, I'm going to keep my ears open for options, but I've got a huge number of skills. The kind of work I want to do is this, and I kind of don't care what the job is. So go with me on that. Trust me, I will get there. If that involves changing a tack one or two or three times, it's okay. Trust us. Right.
So I think sailing is a good metaphor because when you sail, you don't just go with the wind. You can go against the wind. But in that case, you have to change tack because otherwise you won't move forward.
That's fantastic. Thanks very much, Jean-Baptiste, for taking the time. And we'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Joe. It was a pleasure. And it's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Well, that's our show for today. Thanks to Dr. Jean-Baptiste Guyon for the interview. STS students can follow up with these ideas by talking with their personal tutors or by talking with Jean-Baptiste. Contact details are in the program notes. Music in the podcast today was Rolling at Five by Kevin MacLeod. It's available on the website filmmusic.io. We Are STS is a production of the Department of Science and Technology Studies at University College London. If you're thinking about a degree in Science and Technology Studies, or in any of the subjects we cover, just get in touch. We're always happy to talk. If you want to know my completely biased opinion on what's the most important part of our subject, it's gotta be History and Philosophy of Science. Go Darwin, go dinosaurs. We'll have another episode in a few weeks. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast so you don't miss out. You can find out more about the show, tell us what you think, and explore more about the degrees we offer in Science and Technology Studies. Just visit our website, ucl.ac.uk/STS/podcast. Well, that's it for this episode. Let's meet again here soon. Until then, I'm Professor Joe Kane. Thanks for listening. Bye now. You've been listening to We Are STS, a podcast from the Department of Science and Technology Studies at University College London. Subscribe, share, and review.